chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm thrilled to have Emily Hemingway on the show today. Emily is the Executive Director of Tech STL. Well, welcome everyone to the Something Extra podcast. I am so delighted today to have my friend Emily Hemingway on the show. Emily is amazing and she's doing amazing things for St. Louis, and I cannot wait for our listeners to hear from her and all the things that she's doing. But Emily, you and I, we were just talking about that in a sideline conversation. I said, Emily, now how did we get connected originally? And I don't think you'd been here for very long because you just moved to St. Louis about March of 2021. We'll talk about that, right in the middle of a pandemic, which I'm like, wow, that was kind of an interesting timing. But anyway, I shout out to our mutual friend, Kelly Lampe.
Oh yeah. Kelly connected us. She's one of the super connectors in St. Louis.
She is. And you know what? She's not even a St. Louis girl. She's a Dallas girl.
Oh, yeah. She'll be the first to tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. But when she got here, boy, she jumped in with both feet. And I have to say, the same is true of you, Emily. You have just jumped in with both feet. And the things that you've accomplished in the 2 years you've been here just blows my mind. I'm like, either this woman is crazy or she just has a lot more energy than I have, because you've just done so many good things. But I know that you moved here from Asheville, North Carolina, and I was thinking that you were a North Carolina native, but I don't think you were. I think you were born in Salt Lake City.
I was. I went to high school in North Carolina and college, and then moved back when I was an adult. But I lived in Asheville for about 15 years. So I think North Carolina feels like home.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, though, how long were you in Salt Lake? Were you just born there and then moved to Asheville, or like how long were you in Salt Lake?
It's like 8 or 9.
Okay.
My family is a legacy Mormon pioneer family, long history of politics out in Salt Lake. And so it was, even though I didn't live there very long, Salt Lake is definitely where my roots are. And then moving to North Carolina really opened up just this whole new experience for me as a person.
Yeah, very good. Well, I don't know if you knew this or not. Well, you probably didn't, because I was saying before we got going over the podcast, I said, Emily, I feel like it's been so long since I've actually seen you in person. We've emailed, but it's been a long time since we sat down at Mimi's and had breakfast. But our oldest son, Jordan, just moved out to Salt Lake in August of last year. And I don't know that we're going to get him back.
No, it's a thriving city.
He loves it there so much because you have the snowboarding in the winter and then you have the mountain climbing in the summer, and he just absolutely loves it. But, you know, here's the thing. Tell me a little bit about growing up, because did you have aspirations when you were growing up as a little girl to like be in tech or economic development or being an entrepreneur? Did you have any of those kind of aspirations when you were little?
Well, so, you know, growing up, I used to say that I was going to be the first female president up until high school, I think. That's even my very first email address was emily4prez@aol.com. that I always knew that I loved leadership, and I didn't know what that would look like. But I did student government from elementary school on, that I just loved to, I love to be kind of in that rallying space of like, how are we building different initiatives and how are we driving opportunity? And I just loved the idea of servant leadership. And so, I think I was an entrepreneur before I even knew what that meant, that I was always kind of this renegade, that I loved creativity. I loved marketing. I loved branding. I loved building my own things, failing and moving on to the next. So it's just been part of who I think I've always been, even before I knew what that actually looked like as a career.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about that. And on a side note, because I think I kind of had that entrepreneurial spirit as a young child too. And some of the things that I tried to start, you know, I just laugh now, you know, but there's something kind of in your DNA a little bit. But, you know, we're going to dig in all these. You founded six companies. You've lived in 8 countries. So, you know, I was thinking about you and I'm thinking, number one, you obviously love a challenge. And then secondly, I think you love adventure. But did you travel as a child, or did that love for travel come later?
That came, I mean, we traveled, but I didn't get to start doing international travel until I was a teenager. That I was lucky in that my parents were able to afford to send me on leadership trips every summer through college. And that allowed me to go and explore, you know, Europe and Africa and Asia. And then as soon as I graduated from college, I'm so grateful that I took the years before becoming a mom and I just bounced from city to city, country to country, that it gave me the chance to really lean into the wanderlust side of who I am as a person. Because then once I had kids, I really settled down and focused that energy towards my home and my career. But I definitely had, you know, 6 years of just bouncing. And I mean, there were a lot of times where I was just like living out of my backpack or whatever could fit in my car. And I just go from city to city and really find myself in other communities. And that also then played into a lot of my startups and my consulting practices, that I was able to do work in cities and all across the country, because I was super comfortable kind of bouncing from place to place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would love to talk about that, because, you know, I'm like, somewhere, you know, where did this courage come from, you know, to start these companies, to go into kind of the unknown? I mean, really, you went into these countries. I doubt that you had companions or traveling buddies, right? You just went by yourself and you and your backpack.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, the high school programs, obviously, we go as a delegation. I had structure. I also worked with a company based out of Canada that did English teaching opportunities. And so I got a job as an English teacher and would go and work with, it was typically with universities, that I would go and lead camps or programs where I was teaching English as a second language. And so I'd get paid to live in these other countries and do work. And so there was always some sort of structure, except for when I was just going for the heck of it, right? That I loved solo travel.
Yeah. I think you taught English in Korea, right?
I did. Yep.
I think you maybe did that before you moved back to the States. Well, you know, I was going to ask you, but now I get it, because you told me you wanted to be the president, you know, Emily for president. Because I know that you ended up in international politics at the University of Central Florida, which is in Orlando. And I was going to ask you, how did that come about? But no, you're on this path to be the president of the United States. So I can see why you went for that degree.
Yep. But I've always loved government and marketing, right? So like it tends to go hand in hand, that storytelling is so important because it really helps motivate people around different work and initiatives. So yeah, I've loved it for so long. And it now, as an entrepreneur, I'm able to be an entrepreneur who works with the government. And so I'm a rare breed. There are very few of us that are entrepreneur first, government second. And being able to really navigate from both sides of those spaces is really helpful in the work that I do.
Yeah, very good. Well, I know, like I alluded to before, or I stated before, you founded 6 different companies. I would love for you to tell our listeners about a few of those, Emily. I mean, we don't have time to go into every one of them, but here's 3 that I would love for you to kind of dig into and tell our listeners more about: Camp Girl Boss, And I remember you telling me about that, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is so cool. I think you've hosted that in 200 cities now. Tactics, you know, and kind of what you're doing with the Native American tribes there. And then I would love scale up WNC, and I'm thinking that's Western North Carolina, right? WNC stands for that because you, you know, had moved from Asheville. So can you dig into each of those and tell our listeners a little bit about them?
Sure. So Scale Up is actually, it's an accelerator in North Carolina, and it was part of the Scale Up America program. It was actually the first rural community. And so that is tied to, I was part of the founding team and the accelerator director for that. And that was focused on scaling companies that were really at that point where they were at least a year and a half in. They had reached around 250,000 or more. The window was really like 250,000 to 2.5 million. And they were at the place where they could rapidly scale with the right support. And so I was part of the scale up team for 4 or 5 years and was the director up until when I left North Carolina. So that was fun. That was great. That really helped me kind of learn the ropes on building accelerator programs. So I've been part of planning teams and programs in accelerators for a while in a bunch of different regions. And I always loved that model. So Camp Girl Boss, that was one of the most fun projects that I ever got to be part of. So we launched it in North Carolina as a for-profit entity that it ran leadership and entrepreneurship summer camps for middle school girls ages 10 to 13. And after the first summer, we just hosted one big camp at UNC Asheville. We had over 50 girls in the room. The second summer, we hosted 10 camps across the region. And at that point, we realized that we really had something, that this was Camp Girl Boss was around 6 or 7 years ago when, you know, the Girl Boss movement was really just picking up and really looking at how I was part of the organization that ran entrepreneurship curriculum across the country. And they had a curriculum specifically for youth. And one of the things that we started looking at was how, you know, typically for those youth camps, they would get the kids to build like a business plan over the course of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And what we recognized was that, you know, this generation leans in so much more heavily in the idea of being an influencer than necessarily being like a brick and mortar business owner. And that, you know, they think through technology. They don't just think about a business plan. Like, what 12-year-old wants to write a business plan? What adult wants to write a business plan?
So, that's the truth.
Yeah. So instead, we really incorporated technology and innovation, and we worked with the girls on building a website, building an e-commerce site, creating a video pitch, doing a logo on Canva and getting a headshot that at the end of the week, the girls actually had a website that they could sell whatever it is that we're building. And so we leaned in a lot more within the lanes that this generation wanted to look at when it came to business. And it just absolutely took off that, you know, we scaled right around the pandemic that we were doing a national expansion at that point. And we were able to do a number of virtual camps and work with communities all across the country on getting the program gone, really going viral. And so I was able to ultimately sell the program to a nonprofit organization, a CDFI, because it really needed to be led under a nonprofit. That there, as quickly as it was growing, there were just a lot of pieces that as a for-profit were really challenging to maintain, especially because, you know, protecting the girls was our top priority. And really looking at hosting camps as well as the digital footprint of minors, it's super exciting and it's super challenging. And so making sure, we wanted to make sure that we were able to find a home for that program with the kind of organization that had everything that they needed to do it well. And ultimately we did. And I was really grateful to be able to hand it off and to see where it's going now. So it's a great program and I'm excited to see the next iteration.
That is so awesome. Well, I want you to talk about Tactics too, but let me ask you, have you had evidence of the impact of that? I mean, Emily, I'm trying to think of when you had started it. I mean, you haven't had girls. Have you had girls that have actually graduated from high school yet?
For sure. So, you know, now that we have been doing Camp Girl Boss for 6 or 7 years, we have been able to see how those girls are moving forward. And what's crazy is that, you know, this this really appealed to girls that were already taking initiative in that space. A lot of these 10-year-olds would show up with a business, right? That they were already building a product, they were selling a product, they had customers. It was mind-blowing. And so these girls were already totally prepared to jump in. You know, this generation just is so much more comfortable with leveraging technology in order to build income, right? Yeah. The influencer thought model is really resonating with this group, and they have no hesitancy in just going into and doing it. So, you know, we were able to see that by teaching these girls how to build more scalable models and how to monetize what they were already doing, how to be able to access different markets, that most of them were able to just take it and run with it. And what's great is that, you know, we really prioritize how are we teaching them the skills that they need to not only leadership and personal development skills, but also business skills and marketing skills and financial skills, right? Like all of these pieces, financial literacy, so that no matter what they do, they're able to do it better. And so a lot of these girls were able to really hit the ground running, and it, whether they started businesses or they started local community campaigns, that they were able to incorporate the lessons that they learned into so many different beautiful opportunities. And I've loved being able to watch all these girls grow up and knowing that we helped them get on that path and really accelerate the work that they want to do in the world.
Yeah, that is so gratifying, isn't it? I mean, you know, I'm just thinking about I'm going back to what you told me at the very beginning, that you want to help people and you want to serve, you know, and seeing someone else, you know, take it to the next level and be on their own journey and knowing that you had a small part of that, you know, it's very gratifying, and you're definitely doing that today. Well, tell us real quickly about Tactics, and then we'll talk about what you're doing today.
So Tactics came out of what we learned with Camp Girl Boss, right? That we saw that we were able to simplify and package this learning process of supporting like the rapid launch and development of tech-based businesses. And so when we went back to the drawing board, we were like, can we teach this same thing to adults? And so it was during the pandemic where obviously we all had a lot more time on our hands. And so our team took that same model and we rebuilt it for adults, and we started with Native American communities because that was where we have a lot of strong relationships. And so we built Tactics to be, it started as a 90-day virtual accelerator that teaches digital marketing, e-commerce, and online sales to Native American founders. And so we built this really engaging, high-touch training model that it's a mobile app and an online learning community that is working with around 80 tribes across the country. And we're now able to really expand beyond Native communities. And so, you know, we brought it here to St. Louis that we were able to host. We had two different cohorts of BIPOC women. So we supported women founders who are Black, Brown, or Indigenous here in St. Louis, and really ran them through this 90-day training program that works with them on really up-leveling their business through technology. And really excited to see how this is growing and how Tech STL can keep bringing these resources here to St. Louis, because we definitely need more educational opportunities, especially in technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, goodness gracious, I've got about 50 more pages of notes here, Emily, so we're going to have to talk really fast. But, you know, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back on the Something Extra podcast with Emily Hemingway.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend Emily Hemingway. We've been having a really great discussion here, but, you know, Emily was the founder of six different companies. So, Emily, first of all, tell me this. Where in the world does your courage come from to step into the unknown of, you know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, one thing built on another, but you've got a tremendous amount of courage. even like the different countries that you lived in, you know, going into these different countries, where does your courage come from?
Well, I think, you know, part of it is the traveling was just always something that I was comfortable with, but I feel like courage in business has come from every time you do this work, every time you launch something new, every time you put something out into the world, knowing that you can makes you more courageous. Honest to God, I think, you know, out of the six companies that I've started, you know, two of them I was able to sell, two of them are still in operation today, and two of them completely crashed and burned. And, you know, that's not counting the hundreds of ideas that I tried that didn't work, right? That it's
right.
I think that we don't talk enough about how in the world of ideas, whether you're an innovator in work or you're an entrepreneur, getting comfortable with putting something out there, even if it's not going to work, failing fast, building it and learning as you go, right? Like there's, I say this a lot when I, cause I used to own a podcast and video recording studio, and we do accelerators with people who are wanting to get into video, and everybody likes the idea of getting into video. But the reality is that there are some skills that you only learn by pressing record, right? That you can think about it all day long, that you can build this plan. And yeah, it's intimidating. Of course it's intimidating, but you don't get good at it unless you're actively doing it. And that's scary, right? That's putting yourself out there. That's being vulnerable. That's trying something, even if it's not going to work. And frankly, the more that I've done that over my career, the more that I've learned to bounce back, that I've taken the hits, I've lost everything, that I've had to go. I can't tell you how many times I've had to go to my husband and say, well, we're going to have to come up with $50,000 next week. Right? Like the first like $10,000, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then the $20,000, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then the $50,000, right? Like every time you do it and you survive it, you start to trust yourself more and more. You start to lean in to those things. And so it's, I was not born this courageous. I feel like I had to earn that. And it came from learning what I'm capable of and learning that I can keep pushing that line and survive it. And that's a trust in yourself that takes time and it takes making the effort and continually taking that leap of faith and knowing that you'll figure it out on the way down.
Yeah. Sage advice. I love it. I love it, Emily. I know that that's going to help our listeners. Well, you know, we what I really want to talk about now is what you're doing today. And there's a lot here, and I can't wait for our listeners to hear more about Tech at Steel. But, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, March of 2021, you packed up your children, 14 years of life in Asheville, North Carolina, which I know you loved, and you moved to St. Louis. You know, first of all, why St. Louis? What brought you here? What?
My mother. My mom. Your mother. Mm-hmm. My mom lived here with her husband, and both her and my son have the same autoimmune disorder. And so through the pandemic, we had been able to make a lot of headway on helping my son with lifestyle changes and dietary changes. And so we moved here because we knew we could help my mom as well. So yeah, we packed up everything and we moved to a city that I think we'd only been here once or twice. So I knew nothing about St. Louis when I came, but it ended up being a great thing for me and my family.
Well, what surprised you about St. Louis?
I think I was surprised at how well it fit, right? That there were, this is such a beautiful city and there's so much, there's so many pieces that I feel like have been really healing for my children, and how quickly we fell into something that really worked for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you've jumped in with both feet. I mean, you really have. You've jumped in with both feet, and we could all take a page out of your playbook from that. But, you know, I mean, here's the thing. You've been jumping in with both feet in many regards for a long time. So, you know, no surprise there. But you are the executive director for Tech STL, and it's really St. Louis's first tech council. But, you know, how did this all come about, Emily? And tell our listeners about, you know, I think we got a grant, and, you know, it is a 501c6 membership organization. So tell us about Tech STL. What is the vision? What's the mission? What are you hoping to accomplish?
So I was hired by the city of St. Louis, technically under St. Louis Development Corporation, SLDC. that they had received a grant from the EDA, and it was a COVID relief grant, that the city had recognized that through COVID, we saw that St. Louis did not have an organizational champion that was really working towards advocating around technology, and that tech as a whole has become something very different. It's not just about tech business. It's about, you know, how there's tech opportunity in the homes and in the schools and across the community, that the pandemic really showed that that we need accessibility for all people, and that we still have a lot of gaps across the region, that those who were left behind during the pandemic because they didn't have internet access or they didn't have the tech skills to use it, that that had an impact on applying for jobs and transitioning into remote work. Students, I mean, the kids would go home and they couldn't get on school. And so there, those gaps became even more visible. So this grant really challenged me and SLDC to figure out if we had an organization that was built to advocate on behalf of technology and the data economy, what would that look like? And so when I was hired, I first did a couple of months of just a landscape analysis to try and figure out what was the need. And then I came back and I said, I think it should be a tech council, that it tends to be an organization that, because it's membership based, it can be a lot more diverse and robust, that we can build a network of partners that we need at the table, because this is such a complex challenge that we're facing, that it needed to be more than just a nonprofit. It needed to be a network. And so got approval from the city to launch, and then we hit the ground running. That by March, we had our first board of directors meeting, and we just passed our first year of operations. So it's exciting. Yeah,
it is exciting. Well, and I've always said, I mean, we're going to dig into this, but Emily, there is a lot here. We have a very robust startup community. We have amazing, training and accelerators and things like that that are going on, like, you know, Launch Code and Rung for Women and Claim Academy. We've got all these, but I've always said what I think you're bringing to the table. There's no glue. There's no QB that's bringing the team together. And I feel like, boy, I want our listeners to start digging into all of the research that you guys have done and the things, because that's who you guys are, that you're kind of that glue. You're the kind of the hub, if you will, of the wheel, right? And all the spokes, there's a lot of spokes.
A lot of spokes.
There's a lot of spokes, but then you guys are kind of that hub.
Yeah, and it's funny because in our strategic plan, I actually quoted that from you of the quarterback.
You did? Okay.
Quarterback, because I think that's exactly the role that we're trying to play. And, you know, that comes with challenges and opportunities, right? That we've had to really spend the past year and a half building the trust with those partners, right? To be that the wheel, right, means that we have to get buy-in and have these really solid relationships with all of these various networks. And that we're lucky because we are an organization that is uniquely positioned to drive digital transformation, right? That the fact that we are launched into the city and that we are able to lean in from a data standpoint, from an advocacy standpoint, that we have a seat at every table, that we can look at STEM education in K-12, we can look at the digital divide and how we're supporting connectivity. We can support workforce development in the tech talent pipeline. We are supporting the business and entrepreneurial ecosystem, that we're one of the few organizations that can bridge both high-tech entrepreneurship and small business, because tech education is now universal. And then we're also driving cluster growth, right? That St. Louis has so many thriving industries here that, you know, we are not a vertical, we're a horizontal, that the IT and data economy impacts every single cluster. So, so that has positioned us to be able to do this really broad work that has needed to be done for such a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so good. Well, tell me, because I know, you know, and I think when you and I had breakfast for the first time, you were creating your strategic plan. You were creating the 5x5 matrix. Can you dig into that? Like just at a high level, I know it covers 15 different counties is your footprint. But you know, the document, and we'll put this in our show notes, Emily, so people can dig in deeper if they want to, but it's like a 29-page document. So I know we don't have the time to go through all that, but can you just hit it at a high level?
Yeah. So, you know, we do serve the bi-state. So it's 15 counties. our big mission is to make St. Louis the most diverse innovation hub in the country by 2027, right? Like that's the overarching vision that we have. But our 5x5 are the 5 big goals that we think it'll take to get there. So the first one is to 2x our workforce. We did the IT labor market report and were able to determine that our workforce is around 85,500 people in the tech workforce, but we have around 38,000 open tech jobs that we're struggling to fill, right? So doubling our workforce doesn't feel as aggressive when we know that we have half of that that we need today. The others is to hit 50% diversity of our workforce that by comparison to the workforce in general, our tech workforce is not nearly as diverse. And so we're really focusing on how are we creating more access points for those who are Black, Brown, foreign-born, female, LGBTQ, veteran, and rural. So we have more diversity in our workforce because that makes a more competitive workforce.
Mm-hmm.
The third is our pipeline. So we estimate that if we're going to 2x our output, double our workforce, we need to at least 5x our input. And so working with all of our partners on how we're supporting training opportunities, so we have 5 times as many people going through this. We were able to determine that our pipeline right now is only operating at 65% capacity, which means we could increase by 35% and not require any other funding. That we need people more than we need resources, even just to get to 100%. And we're trying to go even further of like, how are we 5 times that level? The other 2 goals are really tied to entrepreneurship. So how are we supporting the ecosystem to have 500 new tech startups and then addressing capital gaps? So one of the biggest gaps that we see is pre-seed and seed investment in emerging technologies. That's something that we're working with partners on building a $20 million founders fund that's engaging seasoned tech founders as well as the area investment community to make sure that we've got the capital available to support that space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so good. Well, there's so much there. And like I said, we're going to put that in the show notes. You also, I think this was pretty recent, but you released the 2022 St. Louis Tech Jobs Report.
Yep.
Emily, I think that was in the fall maybe that you did that. There is so much good information there for our listeners to dig into, but you know, you've already talked about a few of these that are 85,000 open tech jobs, but you really get very granular in saying there's 55 tech operations or occupations. You even have the top tech employers in the region, you know, including Boeing, Edward Jones, MasterCard, some of those, Centene. And then the top tech pathways, which, you know, you've already kind of talked about with geospatial, cybersecurity, software coding. But I mean, if someone were really wanting to dig in and go, okay, you know, looking around, what is our current landscape, kind of looking around the bend, what is coming? I mean, that report, I believe, will really help inform,
yeah,
you know, people to know where they need to go.
Well, and what was especially insightful, I think, for the ecosystem was the skills that were in demand and the skill gaps that we saw, right? So what were the biggest gaps that we have as an ecosystem? That because that report was really based upon demand, right? That you start all the data with the hiring demands, that we knew we had over 75,000 active posted jobs last year in tech, and really looking at what were those jobs looking for. Right. And so that information is super helpful as we are looking at the talent pipeline and we're working with our training partners of who is offering training in this spaces and what are the things that no one in this community is equipped to train around. That we know that we have 30,000 jobs that need these skills and no one is teaching them. Right. Like those are the important things that we need the data to show so that as a community, we are supporting our hiring partners and we're making it easier for them to hire local folks. Right. That we're giving our homegrown talent a competitive advantage because right now they don't have it, right? If they're not getting that support from St. Louis, we're having to source that talent from outside of the region. So there's a lot of questions that we still have to answer, but that data has really helped kind of light a fire and give us some direction in this space so that we can help move it forward in a more just and equitable way so that St. Louis residents have a chance to compete for those jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking as you're talking, Emily, I mean, data, you know, pulling the right data together and driving, it really gives you clarity, you know, in kind of where you are and where you need to go. So I love it.
We didn't source or buy any of that data. All the data that we use in that report is just publicly available. We're now at least, we got a Kauffman grant, an inclusive ecosystems grant that's giving us the ability to invest in the mechanism to collect data that we can't source, right? That we're able to really dig more deeply into measuring the Black and Brown communities and how they're engaging in business entrepreneurship and innovation, as well as looking specifically at some of the cluster growth, because we can't tell you what is happening in cybersecurity specifically. We can't tell you what's happening in geospatial specifically. And so we're now having to build the mechanism to collect and report on that data because it's not available.
Yeah. Well, it will be.
It will be.
With you at the helm, Emily, I have every confidence that it will be. Well, and then just real briefly, I want you to touch on this because this may be a way for our listeners to get involved, but you have the Tech STL Foundation and the Scholarship Fund, you know, so tell us just a snippet about that if you would.
Yeah. So, you know, Tech STL is a 501c6. We're a membership-based organization. Which means our members are able to get involved in all the work that we do. Typically, a tech council also launches a sister 501c3, so a charitable organization that works in tandem. I never felt like just launching another nonprofit was the right way to go because we're trying so hard to elevate the organizations that are already here and, you know, cut down on waste and redundancy. Instead, what we looked at is how are we building programs that are working with partners to deploy funds to support the work that has to happen and using those funds as the ability to advance systems and improve policy and all of these different things. And so we ended up establishing a partnership with the Community Foundation, and we launched the STEM Scholarship Fund, which is focused on making funds available that can diversify our talent pipeline by supporting diverse residents to study technology in regional institutions. And so making sure that it's easier for locals, Black, Brown, female, LGBTQ veterans, to be able to study in regional institutions so we can try and keep them here. So we are actually, we fundraised, we've hit the minimum that we can start deploying scholarships by this fall. So we were able, our last fundraiser was from Tech Week, and we surpassed that line. So we're able to start deploying scholarships, which is really exciting. And then the other is the Tech STL Foundation. And that has been built to be a competitive grant making arm so that we can fund the projects and the programs across the region that really need to happen. And so right now we have four buckets that we support, STEM education, workforce development, business development, and then business capital. And so we're launching this fall. We're in the process of building our board for the foundation and then launching our fundraising so that we can start making available. The problem is that the problems that we're solving are $100 million problems, right? And they're not going to be fixed by just data or partnerships, right? They still require money. Yeah. And so we knew that we needed a mechanism that could appeal to that kind of investment, right? That we had a partner that was rock solid with the Community Foundation, and that we had the piece that we needed to manage and deploy those funds and then use that funding as an incentive to improve systems, improve policy, really up-level the way in which things are working so that we're systematically making this better, right? And so we knew that we needed the kind of organization that could carry that, that Tech STL as an organization could not be that, but that this foundation could potentially be that. So that's what we're really working on. Crafting.
Yeah. Well, one more thing before we move into something extra. And I seriously think I could talk to you for hours and hours more because there's more things I want to talk to you about. But you had mentioned it. And I just want to say kudos for St. Louis Tech Week.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Emily, you guys. It was a nutty week, and you and I kind of talked on the sideline. You go, I'm just now like recovering from that, because in 1 week, listeners, you know, St. Louis Tech STL put on, there were 43 events in that week. 30 of them were hosted by Tech STL. So, you know, you needed time to recover from that, but kudos to you guys.
Like those 30 events were mostly conferences in and of themselves. We had over 250 speakers in those 30 events. Like it was, this city showed up. It was so exciting. The groundswell of enthusiasm We thought it would be a third of the size when we started this. We built all of Tech Week in 90 days. Yeah, like it's put it out there and just everyone wanted to get involved. At 30 events, I had to say, no more. Please, I can't do anymore. And so I'm really excited to see we're about to actually, we're putting out the save the date and I can say it. So the 2024 Tech Week will be April 8th through the 12th. We're about to open up applications for speakers that we're going to pre-fill about 60% of the speakers this fall, and then we'll have the second round of speakers opening up in the spring. Because so much of what we talk about is emerging technology, you know, had we booked speakers for last year's Tech Week in the fall, we would not have had anything about AI. ChatGPT been part of it, right? So it's, yes. And it might as well have been the AI week because every bit of every event had something about AI. So we recognize that there are just some things that we can't know until right before. So yeah, we're really excited to put it out there.
Well, I love it. You're on the bleeding edge. You're on the bleeding edge, Emily. And so that's awesome. Well, kudos to you. I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of the work that you guys are doing. Technology Partners is one of your members. And
yeah, members. You guys came in like in the very beginning.
Yeah. Oh, and we're excited to do that because we see the good things that you guys are doing and it's important work. But I have to ask you, this is called Something Extra. Mm-hmm. What do you believe, Emily, is the something extra that every leader needs?
Do it scared.
Okay. I love it.
But it's, you can't wait until it's easy or comfortable that you have. Do the thing that you know you need to do, even when it's terrifying.
Great advice. Well, hey, my friend, thank you so much. I know how busy you just came from a speaking engagement and rushed to do this podcast with me. So I just appreciate your time. And again, I just can't tell you how proud I am of the work that you're doing. And we're excited to be a part of it.
Well, and thank you, Lisa. You guys do so much for the community. I watch you and I feel the same way. So thanks for continually stepping.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.